4NUE.
Good morning, Chad. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Good. It's a nice day outside. A little chilly this morning, babe.
A beautiful day outside, and I'm just tickled pink. We got a young
to bear left.
And in our club who we sponsored, and we took him down to the testing site this morning, and he passed his technician exam. So he is he is absolutely tickled pink. So I just dropped him off at his home and had a discussion with his mother, and we're tickled to death.
Good. Seems like, I tell you, this we seem to be picking up more hams, you know, just about every day, and that's a good deal, because you know, we were losing people in the ranks back in the 90s, and then they eliminated the cage, and it kind of ramped up a little bit, then the internet took over, and then we lost people, and it looks like we're picking up a lot more people, especially in the last year or two. I think it's got a lot to do with this, especially, the clubs, you know, getting exams out, and where the people can test, and getting the word out, it helps a lot.
He, like I said, he was pretty nervous, and we got him in the testing site, and he calmed down and did really good. He missed 7 questions, he said, or 5. I can't remember which one it was. But he got his CSCE, and he's, you know, we got in the truck, and he kept looking at the radio. I said, well, hey, you know, let's see if we can find somebody to talk to, and we'll do some third-party traffic. So he was, you know, just talking away. So that's a good sign, I guess, right?
Here's a lot of people off. I know several over the years that have gotten the licenses and then don't even get on the radio, or get on it, you know, not very regularly at all. But getting start talking, you know, it gets addictive.
I think someone gave him a CB transceiver to go in his car, and I think his mom was a little bit concerned about, you know, some of the language and stuff that goes on with the CBers. So I talked with her for a little bit and kind of explained what was happening and, you know, how, you know, difficult the exam was, and, you know, just talked with her for 10 or 15 minutes, and she felt pretty comfortable with it. So, you know, it's just kind of neat to see all that happen, I guess.
I remember when I got into it back in the late 70s, it was just, you know, there were very few, you know, guys younger than their mid-30s getting involved in it then. And one of the motivators for some of the guys, especially to get their tech license, was to be able to use an auto patch, which was real common on most repeaters. And that was before the cell phone situation, you know, started really getting heated up. And when cell phones were, you know, that was like a couple $1,000, I guess, maybe more than that back then. But they were, you know, the auto patches, and a lot of repeaters got a lot of people interested initially. But then they found out they could discuss business on it. So it was just, hey, I'm here, I'm on my way home. I used to use a good bid, actually, but back in those days, I was driving I had my pickup, and I had a 50-watt mobile rig in it. But I used it pretty often, though, because I didn't travel much, you know, but I was, of course, because the rules were you couldn't use it out of your local telephone call area. So even if you could hit it outside the area, you couldn't use it, because they didn't want you to cheat the phone company out of a long distance call.
I think initially that was the whole point, at least what I've read anyway. But, yeah, I personally have never been lucky enough to do any kind of auto patch or anything. I've read a lot about it and just think that would, you know, be kind of really neat. But with cell phones and all, I can see how that kind of just fell to the wayside a little bit. But what you up to today? You going to try to enjoy some of that sunshine, or you going to mess around on radio today?
Radio a little bit later on today, I think. My grandchildren spent the night, Thursday night, so we were outside. We were doing some, it was a nice day yesterday, a little warmer yesterday than it is today. The wind was a little tough in the morning, but we got out there and we were doing some, gliders. We have some catapult-type gliders that we use. And you know, I've got a pretty good-sized yard, but it'll still go into another yard or into the bushes somewhere. But they were having a good time with it yesterday. A little too windy for them. They fly better. You know, you just catapult them up and they circle back down. They're built right. These are small ones. They're not very big. They're probably, 9 or 10 inch wingspans. But they get a lot of. They seem to enjoy that, especially when the weather's good. They got the boomerang out yesterday, and I had to dodge it a few times. I thought it was coming back at me. My grandson's 9. He can fling that thing. He'll throw it way out there, and it'll come back. And if you lose sight of it, you have to dodge it because it'll whack you pretty hard when it comes back.
Oh, man, that's funny. That's funny. I just see you out there with your grandson ducking and diving. Oh, that's good. That's good. That's memories, though.
Whacked me on the foot with the one. It whacked me on the foot one time. I was trying to dodge it, and I was going to keep it in the house because this is one of those, they call it a boomerang, but it's one of these three. It's got three, it's not a conventional V-type. It uses three, like a propeller steel. It uses three loads. That thing, you throw it on edge, and it's solid. It's some type of solid plastic. It's not wood. And it's sharp on the edge. And if it gets you when you come back, if you lose sight, if it turns the edge on to you, you can't see it. But if it turns the edge on, just coming back in, you have to kind of watch where you hit. Otherwise, you'll get cracked in the dog or that thing. You'll be having to have some stitches.
The thing I've never thrown was a boomerang. I did a little bit with frisbees growing up, but never was good at that. I tell you one thing I did try one time when I was a lot younger was my dad got me a gasoline-powered airplane. It was a little bitty thing, but it was on a string. Had a little reel on it, and you just held the reel, and it went round and round and round and round. The wings were fixed. The thing on the tail, I don't know if that's aileron or whatever that is. I don't know anything about airplanes, but I'd sit around that yard, and that thing would just go round and round and round. I'd get dizzy, and then finally Dad, came out there and pulled the pin out of the reel so that the reel could go round and round and I could, stay stationary. But I wore that thing out. I had the best time with it, just watching it go round and round.
I think that's what most of us started out with, control line. They call it control line flying, and most of the planes were, small planes. They were plastic, they were heavy. They really didn't fly that great. They used 49 engines. But, I flew control line for a good while before I got into RC planes back in the early 70s. And spent and for that period of time, I spent a ton of money on that, I guess I shouldn't have. And I got to where I was reasonably good, but I wasn't great or anything like that. But it was so expensive then in those days. And the early part of it, the transmitter shared the same 27 megahertz frequencies as CBs did. And when CBs got hot, somebody'd key up a CB transmitter. Next thing you know, your $150 airplane was crashing to the ground. And they changed that later on, and what they changed and allowed the 72 megahertz transmitter receivers, and then you were okay then. But early on, you had to be careful not to be around anybody that CB radio. But, yeah, I still put some control line up until sometime in the 80s. You used to do these. I still got one left. It's what they call it. It's a mouse racer. It uses the same size engine. You probably flew this. It's a speed type plane. It's just nothing but a stick fuselage and a wing and a rudder and an elevator in the back. And that's it. But it was really, those things were pretty fast. But one of the keys to the engines, the people would set these engines up, and they need to have a left-hand prop on them. That way the prop in the plane is pulling away from you instead of towards you like some of the old planes did. But you had to have a special engine, to do that, to get it pull out all the time. That way you did loop overs and stuff like that with them. And the other one was this combat plane, which had nothing but a flying wing and an elevator on it. And those, we'd fly those two at a time. And we started opposite sides. You put a ribbon on the end of it, tail at the end, like a Ridgeland trailing ribbon. You just tried to get up close enough behind somebody to clip the ribbon off of it. And whoever wound up with the shortest ribbon is the one that whoever wound up with the longest ribbon at the end of the session was the winner.
The KO4 NUE. So that would be fascinating. I mean, I could get. I'm pretty competitive. I could get. I probably could get a little out of control out of that. I think I would probably end up destroying my airplane trying to get the other guy's ribbon. But I think that might be the point. Is that you have to control that being so competitive and not destroy your airplane in the process. Am I about right?
Pretty simple. I mean, the bigger planes ran 36 engines, and they were, those things were, I mean, they'd fly 70, 80 miles an hour, I guess, but they were just basically flying wings, and you could tear one of those up in a heartbeat. Then they came out later and made them like foam wings, or a little more durable. I think they still have RC versions of those planes, electric, that run, electric, but I think they're RC versions, but I don't know whether that's how popular that is, or whether that's something, people on the east coast, the west coast used to have all the, it started out on the west coast and moved east, like a lot of things do. The combat planes, they used to have carrier planes too, where they'd have, you'd actually have like a model of an aircraft carrier on there, and you had to land your plane, hit the tail hook on it, just like you would a regular plane. But those were big planes. They were probably 40 or so, 50-inch wingspans, and the fuselage was just profile. It was just a slab, but the wings had were full built up with balsa, and back in those days, they used silk or tissue, but now these, when they build them up, now these, it's like a film. We used to call it solar film, monocoat, stuff like that. It was just a plastic film, and you use iron or a blow dryer like that, heat it up, and it shrinks to fit, and that sort of thing. But that's got a lot more complicated now, a whole lot more expensive.
Well, the other day, I was watching YouTube for something, and I don't know, somehow just kind of left it alone to play on itself, and it gets off topic after a while, but I ended up on remote control jet airplanes, and I'm going to tell you, those guys are serious. I mean, they got little jet engines that, go on the back of the thing. I don't know how many pounds of thrust those things put out, but man, you want to talk about serious. They put those things on those airplanes, and then another thing that was interesting is on YouTube is you can go in there and look for remote control airplane crashes, and I got off on that, And, boy, I'm going to tell you, when those things hit the ground, boy, they hit the ground hard and just go into, you know, hundreds of pieces. And it's something kind of satisfying about that. But, yeah, I'm sure it's not for the operator, but for somebody watching it, I thought that was pretty cool.
Before DJ Deputy, he always calls that planting a balsa tree. And I've done that a time or two over the years. If you spend all those hours, you know, I don't know how long it takes to build planes now. It used to take a good while to build one. And when something like that happens, you about cry. I mean, you spend all those hours in it. Sometimes they're irreparable. Sometimes you can fix them, and sometimes you just have to start and build a new plane. And plus, the engines were, they could get pretty expensive back in the day. You could, you know, if you went head on end, the balsa was a little bit easier to fix than the engine was. I've done that a time or two as well. I've seen some really beautiful planes crash, though. We had a guy who used to live down in America, Georgia, and had a guy down there that I used to fly with. He was an older guy, and he had a twin Cessna. I think it was a Cessna. And an RC plane. It had retractable gear and all that sort of thing. He was just a smooth flyer. And then something happened one day, and one of the engines went out, and he about got it back in, but then it came in to hit he let a wing tip hit on one side, and that thing just cartwheeled across there. I could see a tear or two streaming down his cheek, because it was a gorgeous plane. It was a scale model. It wasn't a real big one. It was probably about a 72-inch. Probably had about a 6-foot wingspan, I guess. But some of these guys fly huge planes, too, and that's a whole other story. Some of the motors they use on those things, engines they use, Chad, I know a couple of guys lost fingers cranking them by hand. And, yeah, they use electric starters for those things now, I guess.
Kind of stuff just, you know, fascinates me, and I never got into it because that's something I spend a lot of money on and could get me in trouble real quick. But when I was younger, we had a model rocket club in, I think it was middle school. And I could build some pretty good rockets. But one year I built one out of toilet paper, the cardboard toilet paper tube, and put a Model D rocket engine in it. I called it the Mosquito. That big old rocket engine and that little bitty rocket, I never did find it. I launched it off and lost sight of it, and we never did find the thing. But I got pretty good with them. I could put parachutes in them, and a couple of times I built a multi-stage that would, separate and keep going on up. So I just kind of lost interest in it, I guess, when I figured out, you know, about gasoline and perfume, things changed.
We used to have, we flew model rockets, too. We had a big open area where we could fly them. And there was a commercial rocket called the Mosquito. I think it was made by Estes. It was just a tiny little thing, and it used one of those small motors in it. When the motor burned out, it kind of kicked it back to the back. It looked like a little piece of wire on the back of it, and you just kicked it to the back, and it would tumble back down, to earth. Rather, it didn't have a parachute on that one, but it was, that thing wouldn't. I mean, it went 6 inches tall, but you couldn't see it, though. And I painted one bright orange, and we got it. I think I flew it about three or four times, but the last time the wind got it, and it's probably still sitting on somebody's roof or garage somewhere. That's been 50 years ago, I guess. And I get in all those hobbies back in the 60s. I was involved in them, model rockets and slot cars, too. I enjoy slot car racing, too. And RC cars, too, for a while. That got expensive in a hurry, too.
Well, my wife's grandfather was a World War II veteran. He died, I think a year or two before we married. But he was into model trains. and he had, I've seen old pictures of it, never met him, but he had down in his basement a whole, I don't know how to explain it, just a whole train station and city and everything, and was an old Lionel train with cars. I mean, we still got it up in the attic. It's an old some gun. I've never seen wiring like that before. It's got old canvas covered wires underneath it, and I think it's a Lionel or something, but it's all wrapped up in the attic. I'd love to see the thing run, you know, but I just never really had time growing up, I guess, to do all that.
My dad and my granddad both worked for the railroad. My granddad worked there from about 1910 to 1960. My dad worked there before the war, and a little bit after the war, he worked on railroad and also for Railway Express before he got into the Postal Service after the war. And we have got one Lionel left, I think. We had an engine in the tender, and the tender got lost, but New York Central, and it was a, this one was made about 1938 or 39, and it still runs. It's not the old gauge, it's not the big one, but our next door neighbor, when I was growing up in Arnold, his family owned the local short line there at one time, and he had a huge, huge old gauge line outfit in his basement. And when he passed away, his daughters held on to it till the mother passed away just a few years ago. They sold that stuff for tens of thousands of dollars. I think they got maybe $25,000 to $30,000. He had some old stuff, pre-war stuff, and they used to call it tin plate. He had all kinds of stuff. It was a huge, huge layout. He also had a 56 Thunderbird in there too, and I don't know who got that one. I drove that one a time or two. That was a beautiful, beautiful car. It had the hard top on it. I think it was 56, it wasn't a 55.
I looked to see what the thing's worth or anything. I don't know. We got a motto around the house: if it don't eat, we don't sell. But I need to get the thing out. He's got all the cars with it. Got all of the. I mean, it's quite amazing. I mean, he's got a little steam place where the it's a like a little steam engine. You plug it up and you tower thing, and it heats the water and. What's the way it looks like now? I've never seen it run, but it's got a whole little town there with trees, and I mean it's kind of lifelike looking, you know, pretty interesting to look at. And I'm assuming he made all of that. I don't know for sure, but it all looks handmade. But boy, he spent some time on it, and I guess that's the point though. KO4NUE.
DJC Friday. Yeah, you can buy a lot of that stuff. They still have to build the layout, build the landscaping out, that sort of thing. The houses and the train station, all that stuff is, usually that stuff is pre-made, and they just, put it in, lay it out the way they want to. But if it's a no-gauge line there, which is a lot bigger engine than most of them are, if it's an O-gauge, you'll say O-gauge on the bottom. If it's O-gauge, it can be quite valuable, because even the new ones now, for instance, the new Lionel O-gauge engine now is probably $500 to $2,500, the new one, depending on how complicated it is. The one we got is an O-27, which is a smaller gauge. That one, you can put a little oil dropper, you put a little oil in it, and it will puff, it'll be smoke out the smokestack. But this is a streamliner. It's like the 20th century Lamborghini or something like that. It's just streamlined front. But I think it's 37 to 39 is when it was built, when it was actually made. It came out of Madison Hardware in New York, and that was the main distributor for Lionel trains back before the war.
Hey, I don't know that much about it. I know it is a line ale. It's, I don't know, maybe close to 2 feet long, just the engine. It's pretty big, I think, for, you know, electric trains like that. But it's really good shape. It's got made out of all metal. I don't think there's a plastic piece on it. But it's very heavy. And a whole bunch of track with it, too. He's got it in the packed up in the box, you know, with the tracks, too. But the tracks are made out of wood. The cross ties are, you know, mini-scale wood with looks like maybe copper tracks. I'm not sure about that, though. Or maybe brass. I don't know. But it's fascinating to look at. I mean, you could tell when the thing was built, it was back in the day.
8 feet long for the engine and the tender, that's probably an O gauge. That's O27 would be a good instrument. O27 engine and tender would probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 12 to 14 inches long, something like that. If it's 2 feet long, it's probably an O gauge. That'd be quite valuable. Most of the time they use nickel silver for the tracks. It was like a fake cross ties. They weren't wood, but they made it look like wood, especially the old ones. It just depends on the vintage of it. If it's real old, it's extremely valuable. And of course, most people don't do anything to them. They just leave them as they are and clean them up a little bit. But something that old, it might be best left alone and, you know, let somebody else handle it. It should be pretty valuable if it still runs and everything's there. It can be quite valuable these days.
When he passed away, his wife left, Anna's grandmother left everything in the basement, and then when she got sick and had to go to assisted living, I think the family went over and packed everything up carefully. So it's in, probably 10 or 15 cardboard boxes. It's packed up nice, you know. Not, like I said, I haven't looked through all the boxes. I don't know what all comes with it, but I'll have to get up. You got my curiosity peaked now. I'll have to get up there and see what it is and get back with you.
I'm not interested in, of course. I don't have room for anything like that, but that'd be something for an appraiser or somebody to look at, because somebody's liable to lowball you on that and not realize what its real value is. Of course, you know, collectibles are just like any other thing. They kind of go up and down like gold or silver does sometimes. But lion ale has been one of the standards for years for collectors. And if it's just old toys, and it's kind of like old toys and old guns. Shed condition is everything. If the condition is good and it's been, you know, just doesn't have any rust or anything like that on it, and it's complete and got all the stuff with it, you know, there's nothing missing on it. Those things can be very valuable. And then again, you know, just as I said, depends on, the economy has a lot to do with it too. You know, people who collect lion ale generally have plenty of money. There are several of them here in this area. I'm sure it'd be the path to the door to try to take a look at it. And, I think there may be somebody in Greenville that might be able to help with an appraisal, but that'd be that many boxes of stuff, that thing could have some real value. And then again, if it's lion ale, it just depends. If it's all lion ale stuff, it's generally more collectible than some of the other trains are.
To look at it and see, you got my curiosity piqued. I might tinker with it myself. I don't know. I just remember, you know, looking at it up in the attic. It's been years ago, and just thinking, man, this thing is rock solid. I mean, it's heavy. It's, you know, very well built. It looks like the wheels on it. I don't know what you call wheels on a train. They look like they've been machined. you know, not cast or anything, but very, very well made. And you can look up underneath it, and you can see, you know, open core, little open core DC motors. You know, I mean, it's just all the little switches with it. You know, that stuff's kind of big and bulky, and looks like a real big fire. You don't know what you're doing, but it's still, you know, fascinating to look at. I can't remember how many cars he's got with it. I know he's one tank with it, tanker car, and I know the caboose is with it, but I haven't looked to see what else is there. But I will take a look and let you know what it is.
If you get it out and start playing with it, you might mess around with it. If you got the room, you might have to set it up yourself. If something about trains, it don't matter how old the kid is, trains are always fascinating.
I think, in my mind, anything that just goes round and round and round, it never has a start point and an end point. That's just kind of easy on my mind, and I can sit there and watch it for hours. You know, washing machine, oh my goodness. We bought this new washing machine, got a glass top to it. You can see, you know, you can look, and, you know, Anna, I have to come in there and get me sometimes. What are you doing? Don't watch. Come on. Help me do this or help me do that. You can't watch clothes round and round. That's just me, I guess.
Easily amused myself. I've always had too many daggum hobbies that I get on one and get off it and start on something else. I've been pretty steady with radio over the years, though. But some other stuff kind of comes and goes. I got really interested in drones for a while, and realized it was new laws. Well, not new, but they made some laws back about 5 or 6 years ago where you can't fly over anybody's private property, but you own. That kind of limits you to flying them. And you don't want to get arrested for being a peeping Tom or being accused of it or something like that. So I kind of let that go by the wayside since I don't have any place close by to fly. But radio can keep you busy. But that train stuff, trains and airplane stuff is another couple of rabbit holes. You can go as deep as you want to.
I agree, and I think I've with the radios. I gotta kind of control how deep I'm going with them because I'm starting to get some eyebrows raised. So you know that you've been there before.
I used to be real weak in the knees for handhelds. I've got two now, but I have had as many as three or four at one time, and I know other people have bunches of them laying around. And I don't know why they fascinate me because they're not, of course, you know, I use one on D-Star, and I use one, I've got one, I got a Kenwood I use for APRS for the space station. But I really don't have, the repeater's not really close. I mean, I can get into the 6-1 on a handheld, but I'm just so far away, it's just, you know, it's not usable in the local one here in town. I'm sitting down at home and I can't use it. There's not anybody on that one all the time. It's handheld, a lot more fun. I used to go to Hamfest all the time.
Got a handheld I use up at the deer camp with a crossband repeater when I'm running the trap line because it's just some really bad spots up there. You know, depends on where you stand, I can get into the repeater or whatnot, but I just set up the crossbander while I'm running the trap line, and then, you know, if I need help or something, I can hit the truck and then out of the truck up to the repeater. But I do like my little handheld. I'm not crazy about having a bunch of them, but I do like mine. It's you know, it does exactly what I want it to do, and it does it simply. Don't have a whole lot of buttons to mess with, and I kind of like that in a radio.
Both of mine have D-Star capability, my Kenwood and my HICOM doing. I run D-Star on through a hotspot because I can't get the Clemson machine from here. And there's really nothing else close enough. But I got a few guys I talk to on. You know, international guys I can set up schedule with, and use, you know, it's the internet's up you own, and it's interesting though, cause you get a lot of talk to people in Korea and, you know, all over the place, but it's not like regular, you know, it's RF in a sense, but it's not RF in a sense, but still interesting to look to, cause I can get out of the yard and work it that way too, kind of like using a crossband repeat type deal. I like both of them for that. Both of them have that capability. One of them, Kentwood's got T-20 capability too.
I see. Well, let me tell you, I'm gonna catch a lot of grief about this one, but I'm gonna put it out there anyway. So, I joined one of the local races groups, and we had a meeting one night, and they were talking about the Ham Shack hotline. So I thought, you know what? Well, that's kind of crazy and kooky. What is that all about, you know? So it's basically a telephone just for ham operators, you know. So I found one on eBay for $10. So I bought it. It's a free service, you know. You just plug it into the back of your router and configure it. And I'm thinking, okay, well, for $10, what's it going to hurt? So I plugged it up, got it there in the Ham Shack, and you can program what the display says. So I programmed it as on the display says the bat phone. It's the phone that never rings, and nobody ever answers. But I got it there in the shack. Last week we were watching a series on PBS called Around the World in 80 Days. And we were laying in the bed watching, you know, got halfway through the series. And it rang. The phone was ringing. And I kept hearing this noise. And I muted the TV, and Anna says, "What's that noise?" And I said, "I don't know." And she said, "Oh, it's the bat phone, it's the bat phone." So I jumped up and answered it, and it was one of the guys in the group trying his phone out. So I have got one call on it, but it's the kookiest thing you've ever seen. KO4NUE.
Say, I've never heard of something like that. That's totally wild. Bat phone, all you need now, Chad, is to have it light up the sky with a bat signal.
I got to be honest with you. My wife, you know, she's an amateur caller too. And boy, she gives me grief. She says, "Can I be Robin?" And she's just doing that to aggravate me. But I tell them, yeah, you can be Robin.
I've never heard of that. I've heard, you know, I don't keep up with a lot of things, I guess, but I've never heard anything like that. I guess that's like an alert system for hams. But to use the phone just sounds crazy to me.
I know, and I know what you're thinking, and thank you for being nice. It is kind of funny, you know. That's a bat phone in the Ham Shack. Batman and Robin. Oh, my goodness.
About Batman, I've been watching. They had the old serials on our Saturday mornings on TCM. They had Batman and Robin on up until, I think, a couple weeks ago. Now they got Buck Rogers on with Buster Crabbe. Played Buck Rogers from back in the 30s, I guess, late 30s. But the Batman and Robin was one back in the 40s. They had some wilder stuff on there. They kept beating them up, but they didn't shoot them. So I don't know when, you know, they had a chance to kill Batman a bunch of times, but they never did it. There's some of the funniest, campiest stuff you ever seen in your life, and I got enjoyment out of that stuff. And that now they're doing Buck Rogers and the rocket ships, Chad, all sound like airplanes. They look like they got somebody holding rocket ship up with a wire, and they got a sparkler stuck in his tail.
I know. Well, you know, graphics back then were, you know, you had to be creative, I guess. But I tell you, I think my favorite is Charlie's Angels. You know, I'm not crazy about the theme of it, but, you know, just the initial, you know, 4 or 5 minutes when the show comes on, you can tell those ladies, they've never held a 38 pistol in their life, you know, and they're all crack shots, by the way. I mean, one shot, and hey, they've got you submitted, you know. And then the blonde, I forget her name, you know, she's got a 5-shot 38, but she can always get 8 shots out of it. I've never figured that out.
Speed reloads they do where you can't see them do it.
Well, I guess Charlie trained them well. But listen here, bud, I am at my destination, so I have thoroughly enjoyed the conversation, as always. But I'm going to have to say 73. So you have a wonderful day and enjoy this beautiful weather. And I will be talking to you later. I guess I'll see you on the net or next time I'm on the radio. KO4NUE, I'm clear.
Hey. Well, it's still morning. Have a good afternoon. It's going to be a good one day. Enjoy talking with you. You'll take care. And talk to you later. M4DJC.
Turned on the radio, Chad. I hadn't heard you in a coon's age, but good to hear you. Just now flipped it on. And Jerry, you're still there. Send Gerald TR. I'm heading to...
I think he was already home or somewhere. He may not be on right now.
Well, I heard you talking about weapons there. I took a Ruger Hunter down the other day, and I had a red dot off of it, and I put that back on, and I went down there, and I couldn't believe it. I've never taken a optical sight off before, and put it back on and had it still accurate. And boy, that sucker is hit every time, Jerry. It's just 22.
Bobber.
No, it's a Ruger stainless steel Hunter with a fluted barrel on it and rosewood handles. It's really a pretty one. Looks like a Mark One. I think it's Mark Two or Mark Three. Mark Three, I'm pretty sure, because it's one of the newer ones. But it don't break in half like the newest ones do.
Kilo Mike 4, Alpha Hotel Papa. Hey, this is Mark, Kilo Mike 4, Alpha Hotel Papa. I've been listening to y'all talk for a while, and I just hooked this radio up last night. I'd taken a 2-meter route, and I came across this. It's an ICOM ICV-8000. It's 20 years old, but it was new in the box. And so I hooked it up, and I just want to see if I'm hitting the repeater okay.
Mark, you got just a little bit of white noise in there, but nothing. It's very negligible. You have to be awfully particular to hear it. Jerry's farther out than I am, I think, but I don't know with respect to the repeater. Go ahead, Jerry. This is N0 TR. My name's Tom.
It's good. The audio sounds good. Just a little bit of background noise, but not much at all. But the audio sounds really good to me. You're getting in the repeater good. That's going to be 20 years old. Yeah, it's doing a good job as far as I can tell.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I live in Woodruff, so hitting the repeater was, when I had my old meter up here, it was a little bit tough, but this one actually does 75 watts, so I thought that might be just enough to make it hit the repeater a little better. I'm probably going to go ahead and put a ferrite or something on the power line going to it and see if that helps the white noise. Hey, Tom, I know you from the club meetings. This is Mark, the key collector, I guess. You might remember me.
Hey, Mark. Who could forget that? Wow. Jerry, he's got a collection of keys that's unbelievable. Well, I've been working a little bit at CW lately. Bob said he was talking to somebody about you the other night. I think it was Dave. gosh, I can't remember Dave's call right this minute, but he was at the meeting that night, and they was talking about you.
Jerome, my wife just bought me a couple more sets of shelves because my shelves were getting too crowded. She wanted me to thin them out a little bit, which it's nice to have her support on that. But, yeah, I've got close to, I think I've got like 470 keys now or 480 keys, something like that.
What do you think of that, Jerry?
Museum. And the name is Jerry, and the call is N4DJC. That's a bunch of keys. I don't think I've ever seen that many, even at a display of Dayton.
Well, if you go to QRZ, look up my call sign. There's a picture of every single one of them, an individual picture of every key. And the call sign is Kilo Mike 4 Alpha Hotel Papa, or as George says, Kilo Mike 4, a happy person.
Trying to get in. That wouldn't be. I'll take a look at that then, Mark. That'd be an interesting collection. I always ran CW most of the time when I was on HF. And that's, you know, that's Tom's forte. But it'd be interesting seeing some of those old keys, especially some of the old ones. I guess you got everything from straight to bugs to everything else, I imagine.
I've got from 1848 through current, and it's a mixture of, I've got, I think, 71 Vibroplexes. I've got 30 that were made as dedicated cooties over the years, a bunch of single levers. I've got a bunch of bugs. You know, I've got the top-end ones, Bengalis, Alberto Pertinis. So, yeah, it's a broad spectrum.
I'll tell you what, when you liquidate them, we're going to have a party. Wow. But golly, they don't give those away. I have my newest one's an N3ZM, I think it is. And I don't know if you got an M or not. It's bronze. And it weighs about, I think, 3.5 pounds or something like that. I really like it.
Those N3ZN, and I've got about four or five of them, and they are very good paddles. I prefer a single lever paddle. I make less mistakes, but I've got several of his. I've got his first one he made, the straight lever, single lever. I've got a couple double levers. I've got I think I've got four altogether of the N3ZNs. I've seen him at the Dayton Ham Fest, and I've got the Facebook group, and he has donated 3 years in a row. He donated a key for me to, not auction, but do a random lottery to give away at Christmas time. So he's a really good guy.
To hear, I love my key. I got a sign on it says "Look, don't touch," but I always let people operate it if they want to while they're here. But has it got a light touch. Last night, I didn't work very many. They was having a contest. But I did work one guy on 80 meters. But he was running, most of them guys are running 30 words a minute. But I hooked into a fella over in Texas the other day. And I don't know, there wasn't much on. I thought, well, I'll have a little QSO with him, and he'll slow down. You know, my gracious, Mark, he was running 35 words a minute, and that's above my ability. I can go up to 28 comfortably, but 35, that's pushing, that's N4 IQ speed up in that area. Go ahead, Jerry, this is N0TR.
Started out with a straight key back in the late 70s, and when Bisher came out with their iambic paddles, I started using one of those. That's, I think I used a 10-tick single paddle for a while with my Argonaut, but I think I moved to Bisher later on. That's basically all I used until I, stopped operating HF. And I'm left-handed, but I could send with either hand with a Bisher. I don't know why. It seems like it'd be odd, but I guess my ear was set up so I could do that. I write left-handed and shoot left-handed, but then I play golf right-handed and do other stuff right-handed too. It's kind of odd that I could do that. That's one thing I could do with either hand. Sometimes I don't think I could do anything with either hand, but that's one thing I could do. I doubt I could do it now because I've just had a practice with it. I never could use a bow very well at all. I tried one for a while. Just never got the touch of it. It takes a lighter touch than I have.
A friend, K9RX, Gary Myers, he uses a Venture. He's used one for like 30 years. And he said, you know, this it's as good as it comes. He said, there's no reason to change. He said, from this point on, you know, they don't get any better. And then he was over at my house one day, and he got on using one of my Bengalis. And when he got home, the first thing he did was went online and ordered himself a Bengali.
Well, that N3ZM is up in that region as far as monetary-wise. I don't know what it was. Be honest with you now, Mark, I've had it several years, but I think it was about $350 or so. The Bengalis go on up from there, but I don't think you can beat a Venture hardly. They're a great key. That's what I told KO4NUE to start out with. But those bugs, they are a work of art. I had a friend that I talked to regularly back in Kansas, and he used one. But there's very few people that can use them correctly, and they're very hard to copy if you get somebody that doesn't use it correctly. And I'd say more don't use it right than do use it right. They're just a horse of a different color, I guess you'd say.
You're absolutely right. And strange, you know, what I enjoy doing the most is a side swiper, a cootie. I really enjoy keying that way. And like I said, I've got about 30 that were from the early 1900s, a couple from the late 1800s, and some newer ones. I've had Alberto Fortini, I had him make me one of his version of the Dynamaniflex. Wonderful key. But yeah, I enjoy using the cooties and side swappers where you rotate every other digit from one finger to your thumb and back and forth.
Go ahead, Jerry.
It takes a lot more talent than I have. I thought I was doing good when I was able to use the Venture as well as I was. I think it's just a simple key that's not, especially if you don't, you know, I never did much ever over 15, 18, 20 words a minute, and it was fast enough for that. And it was easier for other people to copy. Like I said, when I tried, there was a guy in town when I lived in Fort Mill, used a bug, and his code was perfect. But anybody else could do it and just couldn't do it. But he'd been a ham since before the war, I guess. And so he knew what he was doing. He'd been using more. That's all he used for years and years and years. And he had a nice set of drakes. And it was a good, clean signal. And you could read his code extremely well. He never sent much over 15 or 18 words a minute, I don't think. And that may have had something to do with it. But I didn't have any trouble copying it. But somebody else would get on there to get a rhythm going on. It just sounds like it just... I mean, I'm sure people get accustomed to that and can copy it, but my ears just didn't hear it right, I guess.
Friend W0RRL, Jim, he's passed away now back in Kansas. He could send very well. My son-in-law keeps distracting me with pictures of a TV I give him. It had a panel fall down in the back of it, Mark. It's a 65-inch Samsung, and they said that happens with that particular model, and so I got a different one and give him that. He's got it tore apart. I think he's going to be able to fix it, by golly, make him a nice extra TV there. He likes to mess with those things. I don't anymore. One thing is too big, and I can't handle it. But, yeah, they are a magnificent work of art, and probably pretty pricey, especially the older ones, but they're just, I never could operate one. They just kind of, they got a rhythm to them you got to get used to, I guess. I like a light touch and about 28 words a minute. Ariel and I used to talk all the time on 17 meters of an evening just to keep practice up, but we haven't done that in a long time. He's very good. And I worked a station right after K9RX did the other night, and he's like Pete that's in the club. Pete's one of the best I ever heard, Mark, Sendero TR.